Welcome to Let's Talk Real Estate. I'm your host, Anna Olsisi, serial entrepreneur, passionate marketer, and owner at Segue Group. On the podcast, you will find valuable information about all things real estate, plus some fun stories told by a variety of guests. So if you like what you hear, then subscribe and invite any friends who you think may get some value from listening. Everybody, today I am excited because I have someone on the podcast whom I have known for a very long time, sort of very long time, I don't know, longer than a lot of the other guests, let's put it that way. And I find him to be incredibly interesting. His whole family is very interesting, but I did want to talk to him because he is an architect and we haven't had anybody really talking about the architecture side of it too much, and I'd love to just connect on that level. He's phenomenal, does a lot of the cool type architecture that I really appreciate. And so James Blythe, principal over at Level Architecture and Interiors. And so James, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing great, Anna. I appreciate you having me on the show.
Yeah, James, it's awesome. Thank you. You enthusiastically agreed to do this, which I know is, you know, sometimes people feel a little bit weird about being on a podcast, but I think that it's good because we can have a great conversation because we know each other. So there you go. So James, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and all that good stuff.
So maybe the most important thing about me is I'm a double Gator, undergrad and grad school. Woohoo, go Gators.
Go Gators.
And during grad school, I met my wife, which is perhaps the most important piece of the entire educational experience. So after school, we moved to Fort Lauderdale. I had a chance to work down there in Fort Lauderdale, Miami. And this was during the big lead up to the 08 boom. So I was down there for several years working on anything you can think of, from Bentley Rolls-Royce dealerships to 20-story buildings, dealing with coastal construction, things like that. We were ready to move on, so we moved up to Athens, Georgia, where my wife was getting her doctorate, and I had a chance to work for a firm there for a couple years. And then in 2011, had a chance to move back to Gainesville, so we have been now back in Gainesville for just over 10 years and have been kind of building our family and kind of giving back to the community.
That's wonderful, and you have a lot, which I appreciate as a fellow citizen here in Gainesville. So that was a big leap between Fort Lauderdale, Miami, and Athens, Georgia.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow. Yeah. Not, you know, no Bentley dealerships probably.
No,
I know of,
no.
You know, right.
You have to drive to Athens or Atlanta for that kind of thing.
You do, for sure. Which isn't super far, but yeah. So that's very interesting. So what did you do from one to the other? Like, what were you still?
Yeah, good point. So I've been on an architecture track the entire time. When we moved from Fort Lauderdale to Athens, it gave me a chance to work on a very different kind of building project, which was a lot of what's called adaptive reuse, where we give new life to old buildings and usually repurpose them completely different from what they were kind of originally meant to do. Mm-hmm. I also had a chance to spend a year as a lead project manager. So I worked on 16 different projects during that year.
Wow.
And stepped away from the role of project architect to this project administrator role, which allowed me to work with different design teams to help them improve their documents and process so that they could, you know, ultimately have a more sustainable building product. So that was pretty fun just to get to learn and work from all those different teams.
What's important to work from a variety of positions when you're in any given, you know, profession, because it helps make you better at your job.
It does. And maybe give me empathy for some of the things that they would be going through.
For sure. Yes. Yes. And I've learned that throughout the years, and I have massive empathy for the people who have to work in all of those jobs that I do not like to do. So yes.
We all have that.
Hats off to those folks. So, okay. So were you working for someone else during all of this time, or were you always on your own?
I was. Okay. And that's a really big deal in my kind of path forward. Mm-hmm. The idea of learning under somebody is a pretty strong kind of architectural tradition. Not to say that you can't come out and do it, but most of us need, a minimum of 3 to 5 years to have enough knowledge to maybe even meet the minimum standards to protect the public health and safety. That's kind of our ultimate calling, the sort of the baseline calling. So I learned, you know, maybe good and bad at each firm I was at. And I think sometimes people don't acknowledge the fact that learning something that you might not want to do moving forward mm-hmm. is just as valuable as learning a skill that's useful.
100%. Yes, yes. As is failure. Failing.
That's right.
Failing at something just means that that wasn't the thing that you were supposed to do. And then That's you correct. Move on to something else. It's a great, great lesson. Good deal. So then when did you start Level?
So perfect question. So I had a chance to be a principal of a firm from 2011 to 2017. So 2017 is when I started Level. But before that, thankfully, I'd had a chance to be a principal of another firm mm-hmm. For 6-7 years. And kind of learned a lot of those what to do, what not to do. We had an office in Jacksonville, as well as I was running the Gainesville office, mm-hmm. and we were a pretty small firm. So that was an interesting dynamic to run two different offices for a firm as small as we were. But they're two very different markets, and you know, I headed up most of the commercial division, mm-hmm. and they did a lot of custom residential in addition to commercial projects over there. So that was fun. But in 2017, I had an opportunity to kind of build a firm, and Level is we could like to call it a kind of a division of concept companies. Mm-hmm. So the idea of being a part of something larger while still having our own autonomy as a design firm, to me, was a really big opportunity. And I've been able to learn a lot about the development process. There's also a construction division. So being able to have a daily contact with a constructor group mm-hmm. is really valuable. And then to be able to weigh in and provide the things that we do to kind of both the what we call internal projects, which are concept projects, and then external projects, which is clients like UF. We're working on the new soccer lacrosse facility. So that's a really big project for a fantastic soccer program that didn't have a home until hopefully this building is done. So it's a really fun.
That's very cool. Where is that going to be on campus?
It is. So it's in between the new baseball mm-hmm. stadium and the current lacrosse building. So it's literally right in between the two. It's actually going to physically connect. So it'll be one really big building that hopefully provides a nice backdrop to both the soccer and the lacrosse fields.
Sweet, sweet. For anybody listening who is not from Gainesville, the campus is gigantic. And so there is plenty of space for lots and lots of buildings, and this is going to be a very large one, obviously, and it's going to be very neat because we're going to have a whole sports complex there. So a second sports complex, I'd say, within the campus, because right now we've got the football, basketball, all that right there. So yeah, very, very neat, very neat. So you mentioned concepts. So I think we need to kind of slightly go off on that tangent because someone may not know what a concept is. I do, but you know, so what is that? Because it's a unique, I would say.
It is. It's a really unique setup. And it's taken me now about 4 years to be able to give a 30-second elevator speech on what it is, because it was somewhat innovative. And I have to give a lot of credit to the concept leadership team and how mm-hmm. they've developed it. So the idea is that concept companies is kind of the parent company that is very development focused. Mm-hmm. They're in different market sectors. So they got their start in kind of a retail sector. Mm-hmm. And most recently, they've been able to work for the past several years to be well positioned to be in a bio and life sciences sector. So they're pretty well diversified. They work all over the state, which is fun to kind of have a client that, for the most part, brings us along with them when they travel to other areas for projects.
That's great.
And, you know, their kind of focus is development. And then they have the ability to either utilize one of the internal divisions like Level for mm-hmm. architecture services, or they may say, hey, Level's not a great fit for this, and we can use another architecture firm for that. Same with the construction division. Sometimes they're involved, sometimes they're not. And Level is encouraged in the same way to make sure we're offering great services internally. But we're very much encouraged to have our own client base that has nothing to do with the concept company's ecosystem. So we were looking for a win-win and to eliminate some of the pain points that are typically part of development. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, this is, you know, over the past several years, as we've learned to kind of work and streamline things, mm-hmm. has begun to do that.
That's fantastic. So it's like a funnel for business that also expands your portfolio, that it lets you go beyond that. And you build a lot of very neat things.
It's fun. I mean, the buildings, it's good.
Yes. And so on your portfolio, on your website, what percentage of those would be related to concept versus stuff that you've just done on your own?
Absolutely. And we get that question too. So in the early days, it was probably 80% internal concept projects.
Okay.
Most recently, we were 50-50.
Okay.
So 50% internal concept based and 50% other.
Wow. Well, that's fantastic. That speaks a lot about you know, and how you guys approach the whole process. So tell me a little bit about what makes you different. What is your process compared to other architecture firms?
Absolutely. I think that's something that we wanted to set as a goal from the beginning, to find ways that we could be different. And maybe different means a little more balance. Maybe it's the idea of a healthier either workload or workflow, or the idea of giving people resources to, you know, work remotely or work in an office. So in the very beginning, I, of course, brought a lot of lessons learned from other companies and thought, well, if I have a chance to start something, why not start with something that maybe eliminates some of the things that we all industry-wide maybe wish was a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
So one of those was to, you know, make sure we were getting people home on time. And to do that, you have to really plan and schedule and make sure you're working on appropriate projects, make sure they have appropriate timelines. The other piece of it is to try to go after work that, you know, means something to you. And every business has to have work usually that maybe doesn't make it on the portfolio page, that pays the bills, things like that. But even in those instances, how can we bring design, bring something unique, bring maybe it's not even something that looks interesting, but that maybe is more constructible.
Mm-hmm.
So we have tried to, from the beginning, set a goal of creating a healthy place to work, being very easy to work with in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, how we approach things, having a low ego, you know, basically just being appreciative of every opportunity that we get. And, you know, from the beginning, if you start like that, I think it engages people and mm-hmm. makes it to where they feel like you're easy to work with. So that was a big part of it. As we've grown and as hopefully we've gotten better at what we do, you know, we have a goal each day to try to improve, and we sit down quarterly and annually and look at our drawings, look at the way we communicate, look at all of our internal forms. I mean, anything you can think of. How do we project manage better?
Mm-hmm.
And we try to improve, because we know if we're organized and giving, you know, everybody good drawings to work with,
mm-hmm.
that hopefully we're easier to work with. There's a better end product ultimately for our clients. And so we're one of those firms that hopefully we're seen as client focused. You know, I think the team feels that way too. And so being appreciative of whether you're asked to renovate the, you know, a bar at a local restaurant and it's not a full restaurant renovation, you're just literally trying to make the bar more efficient, or, you know, doing a new two-story 15,000 square foot office building for somebody and approaching those in the same way. How can we provide great service? How can we solve problems? You know, that's sort of some of the things that we do, and hopefully that's different. The last piece of it was that we felt like there was a pretty strong need for commercial interior design services,
mm-hmm.
And to not have that be something that was separate. So from the beginning, we wanted it to be level, you know, architects and interior design. It was like not meant to be this afterthought. So mm-hmm. having that, we were able to bring on a super talented director of interior design and then build, you know, a design team with that kind of in mind. And I'll say we have some of the best interior designers I've worked with. They're fantastic people. They know their craft and they're easy to work with. So mm-hmm. a lot of times great product and low ego, easy to work with, is not always something that's kind of combined in the same sentence.
Sure.
So I give them a lot of credit for being awesome at what they do, but also being very enjoyable to work with.
That's fantastic. So how many people then do you have, I guess, total in the two divisions?
So we have, we think of it as kind of one big team, but
okay.
We're currently at 10 full-time staff. We have a new interior designer we're super excited about. She's just graduating from UF, so we'll be up to 11 full-time. And we've got two fantastic part-time folks, so we'll be up to 13 total.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a robust team for sure.
Certainly, the Gainesville market, right, it's a pretty big team.
Yeah, it's a very, very big team. And of course, our commercial projects are only going to increase, particularly in that biotech kind of sector, which I'm guessing you're attacking a little bit with Concept. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know.
No, that's correct. We're part of that. But there, you know, honestly, to speak to some of the growth, we do have a chance to see a lot of stuff at kind of that 10,000 foot level, where we know projects that are happening. We know about things sometimes before they become, you know, super public knowledge. But oftentimes our job is to kind of just tell people what's going on. And I gave an agent here in town last week just a really quick synopsis of projects that we were working on, projects that other design teams are working on, you know, just some really exciting stuff for Gainesville.
Yeah.
And it's always more than you think it would be. And it's across a lot of different sectors. You know, residential is of course going strong, but believe it or not, there's a lot of renovation and new things that are happening in retail, in restaurants. You know, we just opened with the talented group over at Local Provisions. You know, that had been in the works for a while at the old Sabore space.
Right.
So there's a lot of really fun stuff, both east side, downtown, certainly out west. It's pretty exciting to see some of the things that are happening.
Definitely. Are you at liberty to say anything about what's coming up?
I can say some things. I mean, there's certainly, we're working with Concept to develop a 16-acre parcel right across from Oak Hall. And if you've driven down Tower Road near the roundabout, you've seen all the buildings and construction. And, you know, obviously construction creates a lot of dust and noise. So if you're somebody that's been bothered by that, we'd certainly apologize. But I think it's going to be a really nice amenity for folks. And we've had the chance to do most of the buildings out there from the level side. So that it's a really fun mix of, you know, there's going to be some new residential that's not part of this and not part of the neighborhood that another group is doing kind of next door. We have a mix of retail, hopefully some restaurants coming in. There's certainly a lot of office space. There's a new large daycare facility, you know, out there. There was already a North Florida, you know, regional medical center right on the roundabout there. So maybe some good services that were between the two ends of of 75th that, you know, hopefully serves the community in a way that is meaningful.
For sure.
But yeah, all over town there's something. Some stuff I can't talk about yet, but
that's fine. Understood.
It's all over town.
I totally understand. But yeah, but that area across from Oak Hall, if anybody doesn't know, is a very, well, it's not that large, but it is a private school that goes from pre-K all the way through high school. Actually, my kid graduated from there, and it having all these resources across the street, literally completely across the street from the school, educational complex, if you will, that even has things on the weekends with other schools, will be very beneficial to have all of those things just directly across the street from restaurants like you're mentioning, which would be amazing. I'm sure anything coffee or alcohol related for the parents would be fantastic.
That's right.
Those moms would be like thrilled about that. So yeah, there's just like all sorts of stuff going on there in the last year. I mean, I just, you know, year and a half, which really speaks about what you all have been able to accomplish during the last year when a lot of people were thinking that things were really slowing down in that sector, not so much in residential, but certainly in the commercial, with things obviously, you know, related to COVID and all that, but just materials, you know, the prices of materials going up and all that, and maybe the lack of necessity in terms of having tremendous amounts of commercial space because people weren't necessarily working from an office. However, a lot of what you're building is not really office space. They're services, service-based. And so,
that's right.
So has that, now that everything has been picking up so much in a rather short amount of time because everybody's just getting vaccinated and kind of really back out there, has that fueled it even more in the last month or so?
I think so. Well, a lot of what we do, sometimes the pipeline is so long that you know, if it's a new build and it needs to go through any site plan approvals, which would be due diligence on the front end, civil engineering, a lot of those approvals can take 4 to 6 months before there's even an approved building pad to do anything on. So a lot of these things are kind of 8 to 9 months out sometimes. So there's this interesting backlog, and of course anybody in the industry tracks things, but all of the indications are that we're sort of through this little dip, and it's continuing to kind of increase pace month after month. But it has been. I think in a small town like Gainesville, or whatever size you'd like to say our market is, there's always going to be a need for, you know, small spaces, for hopefully spaces that local folks can afford. That's a really big deal. And in some instances, you know, there's just new construction that begins to price out some of those smaller tenants, which you do need to have a blend of, you know, larger tenants, but also local folks. I mean, just like our firm, are really what make the economy go strong and make this a special place. You know, anybody that's done any kind of traveling, you hope to find something unique when you go to different towns. You don't really want to go to the same restaurant that you could eat at in Gainesville. You know, you want to get something different.
Right.
So a lot of what we also do that I'm proud to talk about is go in and renovate existing spaces. I mean, some of the most sustainable ways to look at things are to try to save a building we've got and, you know, convince somebody that you can still have a Class A space and hopefully dress up something that's kind of on the outside of the building, maybe if you need to modernize it. And then think about the inside and really see it as something brand new. So that's a big deal too. And a lot of those renovations, especially in smaller little neighborhood pockets around town, can create a really meaningful sense of something new. The Hatchetberry is one great example of that in the Grove Street neighborhood, which is right on 8th, you know, kind of between 6th and Main. That was one of those old furniture buildings that had been kind of unused for a number of years, and got in, you know, studied the bones of the building. It's really great, a very simple building, concrete block with metal bar joists. And we were able to get in there and create a really nice industrial axe throwing venue. So if anybody's not been there, you know, we had a chance to do the design, but they were a wonderful client with a very clear, you know, kind of expectation for how they were going to approach things. They worked with the landlord to kind of, you know, figure out what the scope could be. We actually worked with the CRA on what will be kind of a phase two, which is where they're going to improve the facade. So there's a lot of local, you know, kind of investment and redevelopment incentives out there for small businesses that will help either match funds or provide, you know, maybe first cost funds to improve existing buildings.
That's great.
So those kind of things are kind of fun too.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the CRA, which is a community redevelopment agency, and that's done a tremendous amount of good in these formerly distressed areas where they've brought, it's just so pretty and the way it's been approached. I mean, they had to do Depot Park was part of that, and just the beautification of the southeast and downtown kind of area. And now bringing it a little bit further north to Pleasant Street, Grove, you know, the Grove Street, you know, all of that area. It's just bringing life to that area, bringing more people to that area, especially from the west side, which is exactly what the plan is to drive business and growth to that area of town. And to do it through architecture and design is brilliant, you know, because you can have all the businesses there and yet, you know, people have to think they're cool, you know, and to actually go over there and like hang out there. And so, yes, I've heard about the Hatchetberry. I have not been to the Hatchetberry.
It's pretty fun.
Yes, everybody who posts pictures is just super fun. I probably would end up with an axe in my foot. I'm just saying, like, I probably would. So I'm not inclined to, I'm just not ready to visit the Hatchetberry yet. But I have heard amazing things about it from everybody. So, you know, maybe one day I'll be brave enough. Or the people around me will be brave enough to have me there. But yeah. So that's great. You know, and that really does blend your interior and exterior designs together. We did have somebody on the podcast, actually it was Sarah Kane, who was talking about how they work a lot, you know, from the inside out and talking about how it's going to be used. And that affects the design of the exterior. And it sounds like you guys approach it very much the same way. much more commercial. She does a little bit more residential, and you guys do it on the commercial.
Yeah, they have a great group. I mean, Sarah is an incredibly talented designer. Mm-hmm. You know, the two of us joke that we'd love to work on some projects together. And yeah. That's another just kind of example of very low ego people that care about the design before they care about, you know, who's in charge of what. And it really is something that, you know, a group like hers, and honestly, there's a lot of other wonderful firms here in town that really want to see design driven to kind of the next level, so that it, just like if you have a lot of really good restaurants in a town, it kind of ups the game. You know, you can't come into the market and not be on your top game. I think all of us see these opportunities and a lot of the economic growth as a, hey, let's up the design game to where Gainesville is a place that can attract, you know, people to come in because of whatever it is. And it, as silly as it is, everybody knows about the Instagram moments, but it is part of the experience. You know, we kind of feel like it's the canvas maybe to the art that is whatever the space is. So we take our role seriously, even if we don't need to be, you know, front and center.
I love that. Well, I agree. You know, a lot of people, we do get a lot of people moving here. And previously, I have heard the complaints of, it's just not particularly visually interesting. You know, people stay here because it's so nice to live here and everybody's so amazing. It's like one big family. But to add the visual, like the coolness and to make us unique, we don't want to look like every other city in Florida or anywhere else. So I appreciate that a lot that you've been able to do that. Yeah. And so what, do you have any like quirky projects coming up? I mean, you mentioned the Hatchetberry that you had worked with them. So is there anything else that you can touch on without maybe naming names, but types of things?
Certainly. Well, I mean, beating kind of an axe throwing bar venue is a difficult task. I think most people in the beginning were just like, you've got to be kidding, right? You're going to combine, you know, and you don't have to drink, but it is offered there.
Sure.
Gosh, there are so many unique spots. I mean, probably the most unique that we get into are the spots that where you kind of combine an existing use with something new. Mm-hmm. Or, for instance, I thought it was a pretty fun project to do Opus Coffee in the ground floor of the 802nd building. So it combines the idea of a lobby hangout space with, you know, a coffee shop that also serves beer after hours. So I love those kinds of projects. Man, we've got so many interesting things. I wouldn't even really know where to begin. We are looking at a project over in Jacksonville that's kind of right on the ocean. That's sort of a mix of a boutique hotel, retail, office. So we've got some things like that in other markets. And here in Gainesville, unfortunately, probably the coolest ones I can't really talk about yet. But I do know that there's some other really cool projects that are coming online.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see those come to fruition because I know we're right there. We're at the cusp of going from a little bit to cookie cutter and boring to taking it to the next pun not intended, but taking it to the next level. So
fair.
There you go. So what, so I guess maybe you've answered this question, but just, you know, which projects have you enjoyed the most in the past? You don't have to name one in particular because that's hard. It's like naming your favorite kid.
That's right.
But what things, you know, is it the renovation? Is it just starting from scratch?
Sure. Sometimes it, the favorite project that shows up on the list is maybe you end up loving the client. You know, you love that they appreciate what you do, but you also love that they bring something to the table. We enjoy working with clients that have great ideas. And honestly, when it feels like it's a discussion rather than a either here level, please draw this up, I figured it all out, or, you know, we are expected to kind of come up with everything out of nowhere. We like the ones that are in between, where it's kind of let us see if there's any ideas we have that might make it even cooler. Mm-hmm. But honestly, we love what you've done. We wouldn't change anything about it. Is also fun, a piece of it. I like the adaptive projects probably the most because sometimes those are it's not so clean and simple. You know, you have to really work with what you've got there. You know, the Hatchetberry was a fun one like that. I had mentioned Opus. We actually did projects on all the floors of that 802nd building. So infill in a multi-story building is really interesting. You have to coordinate things floor to floor.
Yeah.
Trying to think of some other fun ones offhand. Actually, one of my favorite little gems is we worked for the Department of Agriculture, right where 34th and I guess it's maybe 20th hit. There's that Doyle Connor building that nobody really probably ever pays attention to, but it's on a major road, and there was an existing storage building on site, right? So it was this, no one would ever list this as one of their favorite projects, but we took this project, and it was a really kind of straightforward project. We made this building look, I think, pretty awesome for what it was. It's just a rectangular, it might as well be a shoebox with two big doors in the front. But we showed folks that, you know, on budget, we can bring a really nice design, make this thing super watertight and functional, and hopefully give it another 30 to 50 years without them having to build a brand new building there, which would have been a total bummer and kind of an honestly a waste of all of our dollars.
Sure.
So to be able to do something like that and then show people, hey, this is something you can do, is really fun. Probably my favorite project was we had a chance to work on Frankel Media Group's office, and they're on the fifth floor in Celebration Point of the 5001 building. And so the idea there was to take advantage of just the expansive glass views. I mean, it's fifth floor, so you can see pretty far in Gainesville at that point. And to work with a really creative client that brought these, I mean, world-class ideas to the first meeting and said, like, hey, we want to challenge everything and make this not only a great space for our team to work, but a place where clients love to come. You know, I know they actually sometimes will even shoot videos in the space. So to be able to use it for some of their own production needs and things is really fun. So that was a great one where that was, you know, one of our super talented interior designers, Christina and Jessica Vanderbees and our director worked, you know, directly with Frankel. And it was awesome. We got to install, if you've not seen the pictures of it.
Yeah.
So my favorite were the button lights, which were those LED panels that basically look like we took them out of Toy Story, and they kind of, you know, light up the conference room table. So that was probably one of my favorite ones.
Very, very cool. Yeah. We've been meaning to shoot a video there, so maybe maybe this is like the sign that says you've got to do it. So yeah, because we have to show the cool things that we've got here in town to anybody who thinks that, you know, it's not like that. Like, we don't have big companies like that and cool design. So for sure, you did mention adaptive, you know, and all of that, that's adapting to spaces that exist and doing a design based on that. How about adapting something that you've already started designing and then having to morph it into something else because of something like, hey, a pandemic, for example, like if
yes, absolutely. Yep. And that has occurred as well. So a lot of times what will happen is a project, for instance, like the Hatcherberry, I don't mean to keep going back to that, but they decided to make it into two phases. So they, you know, they could open phase one, which was focused on the axe throwing lanes, and those naturally have their own kind of social distancing that can kind of happen at those lanes. But phase two is actually, you know, kind of a dedicated bar area where it'll be, you don't have to throw axes. You can just go there and have your traditional kind of bar games, fun things kind of environment, which is a little more dense, you know, occupancy wise. And so that was an idea of, well, let's break that piece off until we feel like that's going to be a good idea. We have completely redesigned, at one point, a two-story office building that was under construction and had the steel up. And the client said, hey, we need to reconfigure who's going to go in and what that's going to look like. So we were able to push pause on that. Sort of work with what that looked like. And, you know, most of it is communication that it comes down to. You know, what is the end goal? How can we serve you? You know, everything just comes down to kind of the timeline to make the changes and then to kind of adapt to that if it's already under construction, for instance. But a lot of it is that forward thinking and what is it going to look like? And I think that can be difficult. So even now, as we're doing restaurants, I think they're becoming aware of this idea of, you know, where do people queue when they're waiting to have a table?
Yeah.
You know, how many people have to pass by that table on their way to some other table? You know, what does that look like? Where is the kitchen? Where are things like that? So we're already getting into some of those things, you know, even on spaces that we're designing now. Certainly office spaces, anything you would think of where people are kind of there for prolonged periods of time.
Sure.
And then one of our big clients is O2B Kids. And so we work with childcare. And what does that look like? You know, having three kids and one of them is currently still in a daycare environment. You know, what does that look like to be able to say, you know, not only do they need to be safe and it needs to be fun and daylight filled and, you know, just a wonderful place for children to kind of grow. And honestly, for the amazing staff that work in those facilities, is it like for them to be there? And now we're layering on this whole idea of what does it look like to try to, you know, daily sanitize things? What kind of surfaces are we putting down? Do we consider active technologies like UV lights that come on after hours that kind of, you know, actively kill things in the rooms? And what does that cost versus, you know, what does that save on staff time? We looked at things like filtration in HVAC units and is that worth it? Is it not worth it? How many air changes an hour, you know, can we get into those rooms? Because actually airflow has proven to be one of the best, you know, kind of deterrents, I guess, if you will, about these airborne, you know, viruses and other things. You know, how many times can you get new air into that room every hour is the count. So it's an ongoing thing. A lot of it is honestly stuff that we do anyway, just trying to learn and get better. You know, if we find a cool new window product and it's affordable and durable and looks great, you know, we're going to get that in. It's the same with anything else, just adapting to some new need, whether it's how people use the space or whether now your whole staff is going to work from home, you know, 80% of the time, or what does it look like? You know, what does hoteling stations look like versus what we would call kind of a cold desk or a permanent desk set up? So all of that is everything we do. And it's the same on the residential world. You know, I think everybody now has found, oh my gosh, I'm home all the time. You know, what would I fix about this place? What rooms do I need? What do I not need? And, you know, if you're like us, Tara and I are both working from home. You know, we'll go out for certain events, but for the most part, you know, having a place in your house, I think, is now going to be a thing. And whether it needs to be a dedicated room or whether you have some kind of temporary during the workday kind of setup that maybe goes away so you don't have to stare at the stress of this hardware, you know, just kind of always staring at you. I think a lot of folks are using that to think about. And whether you work at home or not, you know, what does it look like to have guests over or to just spend more time in your own home? So I think that's been an interesting thing for us.
Well, it sounds like, you know, what I've been seeing is, yes, 100% people are asking for the home office or dual home office study space for the kids or whatever, but then outdoor space. And it must be challenging to get, creative on designing something with outdoor space that can be used in Florida, because a lot of people are like, oh yeah, you can use it, you know, year round. And it's like, not necessarily. Can you?
That is correct.
Yeah.
And the humidity and of course the heat is something that's challenging. You know, if anybody's been to California, you know, it's almost like not fair. You can design whatever you want because there's no bugs. There's like no humidity. There's always some breeze. It gets cold at night, you know, on the coast anyway, certainly inland it's different, but
sure.
Humidity in the South is something that design teams, I mean, it's literally one of our number one issues that we have mechanically, kind of getting the interior humidity under control.
Uh-huh.
And then for outdoor spaces, I think what we do now is, you know, the most successful design teams and clients create these outdoor spaces when we look back to what people used to do, you know, 1900s to like 1950, that era of how do we take advantage of shade, natural breezes, you know, how do we maybe even incorporate, believe it or not, some water so that we get some of this passive cooling that kind of happens when you have nearby water and having, you know, breeze blow across it.
Yeah.
So before the advent of air conditioning, you know, you had to design like that, you know, take in the cold air down low, exhaust the hot air up high, and create these outdoor shaded environments that also let breeze blow through. And so that's where you have to get into, it's very site specific. So if you're a developer of a 200, you know, lot subdivision, you you need to consider the solar orientation, and not every house is going to be able to have the same amenity. You know, on it might be the back side of one house has the ability to carry this outdoor space, but the other house may be flipped completely, and that side is just going to get blasted in the sun, and there's no, you know, no way other than having a super deep, you know, canopy or something to shade it. So you have to look at those things too. And that's not often thought about, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm glad that you're thinking about it, because more and more, you know, that's where we were. That's where we still are right now, where everybody wants to be outside and eat outside, and which is great. It's fine right now. It's wonderful. It's beautiful right now. But that's, you know, that will be changing, you know, slightly in the winter gets too cold. And in the summer, you know, it gets kind of hot. So keeping that in mind so we can enjoy that year round is really important, not just for residential, but also commercial, right. You know? So.
That's correct. And people like those spaces. You know, I had a chance to go to Superette actually over the weekend, which is where Civilization used to be. So that's over here on the east side of town, just off Main Street, you know, kind of behind where that Publix is. And there's actually no indoor seating. So all of it is either covered right outside the building or this lovely outdoor garden. And of course it does not work when it rains. But when it's not raining, you know, you really can take advantage of those spaces that maybe used to be left over on the commercial side.
Yeah. Yes. I'm dying to go there. That's going to be, we've been meaning to go there, and every time we want to go, something comes up, but I've heard amazing reviews of that particular place. So, you know, anything that involves wine and cheese, like, of course, I'm down with that. But I've also, you know, yeah, the food I hear is great too. So yeah. So that's wonderful. Well, I love that you're incorporating all of this, that you're incorporating the future and cost savings through architecture that trickle down into what people will be saving in personnel, you know, and any issues that could come up with employees and all of that, which is, I know, typically not thought of. So it's a good approach, and it's the right approach to do that. And I'm sure the businesses really appreciate that. If nothing else in the long run, they definitely will.
So. Absolutely. So we find that just asking questions usually gets to this like return on investment, you know, thing of, well, first of all, how long do you plan on being in the space? You know, are you the owner? Is it a long-term hold or a short-term hold? What is the use going to be? You know, we ask them, where are your pain points? You know, where do you spend a lot of money on supplies and electricity and water and things that you don't want to spend the money on? You'd rather put it into the food or put it into the staff or whatever, you know? So by asking a lot of questions, and it's kind of a process that we have, and it's the same for homeowners, you know, asking people what matters and then trying to design a solution, you know, with them in mind. And hopefully it's something that's relatively universal. I mean, it's not like putting in a lot of water savings features isn't going to translate to the next tenant or to the next homeowner. Those are just things that carry on, you know, indefinitely.
Definitely.
So we try to bring that to the table early on and not as an afterthought.
Yeah. Well, and that makes the design easier if it's already built in from the beginning, I'm sure.
That's correct, yeah.
So, yeah. And you mentioned residential a couple of times. So do you do residential?
We will take it on in certain instances. So we, you know, custom residential tends to be something that Level is interested in. You know, I've got a background in commercial and residential. Mm-hmm. We have folks that have a really strong residential background on staff. Mm-hmm. So with the way that market conditions have been, we have been focused primarily on commercial, but we encourage residential clients to come to us. And usually one of the first phone calls we have is, hey, I honestly say, if we are not the best fit, let me talk to you. Let's figure out what your program is. And then I can actually, if we're not the right fit, I can recommend you to somebody that might be a better fit. Oh. So we're one of those crazy firms that, you know, actually will sometimes send potential clients to other firms.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on the fit, based on our workload, you know, some of the worst things we can do is try to take on more than maybe we can deliver in the right timeline. So we try, and we're human, so we don't always get it right, but we do try to take on the right projects. And we do that on the commercial side too. But I will say there's probably a really good fit for certain residential projects with our team. Mm-hmm. And then other things, and it's not a size thing, like in terms of square footage or one story, two story. Sometimes it's the client, it's their goals, it's when they need it by. So it's kind of a case-by-case basis, just with any project, not just residential.
Yeah, true. That is true.
Yeah, so. But we bring a lot of what we learn on the commercial side to the residential side. So you're getting this idea of a lot of the things that we learn, you know, R&D on the more complicated commercial projects can kind of trickle down into something that's a little more traditionally straightforward and bring that same kind of horsepower to that.
That's very cool. Well, we would love to see, because everybody asked me this, modern architecture, more of that in Gainesville. So if you're working on any projects like that, I can't wait to see those because that would be very, very cool. So yeah. All right. Well, is there anything that you wanted to talk about that I have not touched on?
I think the biggest thing that we get asked a lot is, when to engage an architect or why do I need an architect?
Mm-hmm.
And this is applicable to any project anybody is talking about. So whether it's I'd like to enclose my carport, or I would like to build a 10,000 square foot, mansion on the ocean, or, I'd like a coffee shop, or again, I'd like a 10-story building built here in town. I always like to say to folks, the earlier you can, get somebody that's kind of thinking on your behalf, the better. And the reason that, I am an architect, but the kind of the purpose for an architect is to, number one, be that client advocate. Somebody that, can kind of interface between all of the pieces that go into the development or the building process, and have somebody that can speak the language and sometimes translate it back to you if you maybe have limited experience. Or on the flip side, if you're a super sophisticated client and this is your 10th project, somebody that really can streamline and work with you quickly, that already knows what to do, knows the next steps, and kind of can, again, problem solve along the way. I think the preconception that architecture is like buying a car. We always use the analogy of designing a building is not like buying a Tesla. The Teslas have sometimes there feels like an infinite number of options, but there's all the options that are kind of already pre-built into an engineered product that works together. So
right.
As much as I would love to have kind of an a la carte menu of all these pieces that go into a building, and some of that we do have, but for the most part, every building we make or every house we make is new. It's custom. You have to combine these pieces in the real world and they have to work together. So having an architect that becomes that leader of that team of engineers, of the designers, of the builder piece of it, hopefully realizing the client's dreams. That's kind of our role. We work in that. How do I solve the challenges? How do I ask questions before people even know to ask them? When something comes up in the field, even if we've designed something as perfect as you can, how do we adapt to some real world condition that popped up through no fault of anyone's? And we all meet on site and figure out how to keep the original design intent and solve this with some real material. Lately, honestly, it's been projects that have already been designed, now being told that a steel bar joist, you can't get it for 8 months if you order it tomorrow. And having projects that were designed with that
yeah.
in mind, you're like, okay, well, I guess we have to design it with something else now.
Yeah, or
lumber prices cost, yeah. $1 million a 2x4. What are the alternates to that? So that's kind of the role in simplicity. It's we are the advocate of the person or the entity, and our job is to help them to the best of our ability.
You're a problem avoider and a problem solver.
That's right. Yep. We have a degree in design thinking is really what it is,
I like that. I think that's awesome. I love the way you put that. So yeah, it's design thinking. It's not just building something and hoping for the best, but thinking it all through. Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, James, this has been awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's thanks for joining us and giving us all this great information. And I love your projects. I can't wait to see some of them in person, which I haven't had the opportunity to do yet. and hopefully people who follow our podcast will also see them when we post them on video as well, because it's going to be very interesting. It's stuff that you don't expect to find in a place that's not a major metropolis. So, yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You're welcome.
You're welcome for sure. All right. Well, great, James. Well, hopefully I can have you back and then we can talk about all those projects that you were not at liberty to speak about.
Absolutely. Today. Would love to. Yeah. I would love to. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you everybody for listening. Definitely check out Level's website. It's leveldesign.co because they're cool, too cool to have the com. We had a whole conversation about that.
That's right.
Yep. So yeah, we'll put more information, of course, on our podcast description and on social media as well. But for now, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I look forward to showing everybody this architecture. Not just describing it on audio, but showing it to you on video and photographs. So until next time, thank you, James. And we look forward to bringing you another podcast soon.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening today. If you like what you hear and want to learn more about real estate and hear the occasional funny story, then hit that subscribe button right now. And if you know of someone who'd benefit from listening, then tell them to subscribe too, or else they may feel a little left out. For questions, topic suggestions, or nice comments, send an email to anna@segwayre.com. We can also connect on Facebook at SegwayRE. Thanks for listening as we bring you a new way of doing real estate. Bye!